Whoa.
I'm sorry.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Kenneth Reese of the Roanoke Bar. I'm here representing Erie Insurance Company. This matter raises the issue, can a medical provider who is treating a claimant in an automobile accident obtain an assignment from that claimant, which would enable that medical provider to directly sue the tortfeasor's automobile insurance company? We submit that that cannot happen in Virginia. That has never happened in Virginia. There is no precedent for this to occur. And we submit that, yes, it is possible to have a claimant assign rights that that claimant has. However, in this instance, a claimant may not validly assign to a medical provider something the claimant doesn't have. This is premised on the right to future proceeds that the claimant may recover from the tortfeasor, and we're not saying that the claimant can't assign future proceeds. But the fact is that here, the claimant and the chiropractor attempted to place in the assignment the right of the claimant to proceed against the tortfeasor's insurer, and at the time, there was no relationship between the insurance company for the tortfeasor and the chiropractor or the claimant. The obligation of Erie Insurance was to its policyholder, Joanne Hudson, the alleged tortfeasor involved in the accident. There are basically two avenues of approach, one of which is pure assignment, which apparently is the avenue relied upon by McKinley Chiropractic. The second has to do with the statutory scheme set forth for medical liens in 8.01.66.2 and 8.01.66.5. Our position there is there is provision in 66.5 for notice of a lien such as this to be presented to three parties: the injured party, the injured party's attorney, and the tortfeasor. We've cited the, and there's a Latin phrase included in our brief, by which the legislature is interpreted as intending what its words actually say. As a general principle, some may disagree with that, but in this instance, the principle is if the legislature says that notice is valid against parties 1, 2, and 3, that acts as an exclusion for party number 4, the insurer for the tortfeasor. There has never been a case, and McKinley Chiropractic has not cited one, in which a medical provider in the position of McKinley Chiropractic has been permitted to file a suit against the tortfeasor's insurer.
But doesn't your whole argument boil down to a very simple logic, which is that you can't assign a cause of action you don't have?
Yes, sir.
And the patient doesn't have a direct action against the tortfeasor's insurance company, therefore the patient can't assign it to its doctor?
That is as succinctly put as it can be stated. Yes, sir. And we submit there's no case law of the cases that have been cited. There is no case that supports opposition to that principle. And given that, I'd like to reserve however much of my time I need in rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Steve Bass, and today I have the privilege of appearing before you on behalf of McKinley Chiropractic Center, PC. Erie, on behalf of Hudson, negotiated a settlement of a personal injury claim with Dodson. As part of that settlement, Erie obtained from Dodson a release in favor of both Hudson and Erie. In exchange for the release, Erie agreed to pay Dodson $7,300. Now, prior to the negotiation of that settlement, after the original accident resulting from Hudson's alleged negligence, Dodson was treated without prior payment to McKinley for injuries received as a result of Hudson's negligence. Before rendering the treatment to Dodson, McKinley obtained from Dodson an assignment of Dodson's litigation or personal injury settlement proceeds and gave notice of that assignment and the notice of a lien under state law, 8.01-66.2, by phone and fax to Erie.
At the time of the assignment, did the patient have any right of action against the tortfeasor's insurer for anything?
No, nor did he assign that, if there was one. He assigned it, assigned to the treating physician, in this case McKinley, a portion of the proceeds of his action against Hudson. And we think factually, by virtue of the insuring agreement and the relationship between Hudson and Erie, they're basically one and the same in the sense of the proceeds. Erie, for Hudson and itself, who were both named as released parties, the entire settlement proceeds which had been reached with Dodson, and of course McKinley is out here in the dark. He doesn't know what's going on between Erie and Dodson. And Erie did this payment of these proceeds in ignoring an assignment that they acknowledged they received, and also electing to ignore McKinley's lien under 8.01-66.2. So this case is really about what's McKinley's as an assignee of litigation proceeds, and that assignment is recognized under 8.01-26 as something that's valid in the other cases we cited, Musser and similar cases, Kelly. It's not about taking an assignment of a direct action that Dodson had against Erie. It's based upon Erie's wrongful ignoring of the assignment and the lien of McKinley in paying all of the settlement proceeds, which were no longer entirely Dodson's, all to Dodson. Erie suggests that McKinley should find his payment in Dodson's pocket, but then that begs us to answer the question, why is the money in Dodson's pocket to begin with? And Erie argues McKinley's assignment is, in effect, not applicable to money paid to Dodson because that money is somehow not litigation proceeds. It's not the proceeds that are referred to in the assignment. Or if it is, that McKinley cannot sue Erie because of the language of the release that Dodson only signed, and because Erie had no direct contractual relationship with McKinley. An analogous situation, if I might, would be if Erie was buying a house from Dodson and the house was encumbered by a deed of trust in favor of McKinley, and Erie paid Dodson whatever agreed purchase price they had come to and received back from Dodson a general warranty deed with English covenants and title, then Dodson, after doing that and moving out, stops paying the deed of trust obligation. Then when McKinley's trustee forecloses, Erie says to McKinley's trustee, well, we paid Dodson, who gave us a warranty deed. Get your money from Dodson. Well, under those facts, I think everyone here would agree Erie loses if they were the purchaser from Dodson. Erie's argument in response to that, it'd be very similar to what they're making here. In other words, McKinley's assignment of litigation proceeds, they may say, is different from if McKinley had a deed of trust. The money paid to Dodson by Erie was not encumbered by the assignment or the lien, as the house was by the deed of trust, because the money in this case was not litigation proceeds. There's no way, you have to really stretch your imagination to figure out how the money that was being paid to Dotson was, by Erie, was not litigation proceeds or settlement proceeds. McKinley's second response to my deed of trust analogy would be that McKinley's deed of trust was recorded, therefore notice to the world of McKinley's encumbrance. But McKinley only in this case gave notice of the assignment and lien to Erie, not Hudson, as they argue. They argue that 8.01-66.5 requires McKinley to notify Hudson, not Erie, of its assignment and lien. Well, it's acknowledged by counsel in the trial court that throughout this process, Erie acted on behalf of Hudson. And as the, I think it's the Burris case that we cited, says, notice to an agent is good, as good as notice to the principal. So, in effect, they did give notice to Hudson by giving notice to Erie. Lastly,
so the insured is the agent of the insurer?
In this case, it's acknowledged that Erie acted on behalf of Hudson.
Well, that's what every insurer does when they provide a defense to an insured, but that doesn't make them into principal-agent relationship.
Well, they negotiated the settlement, and the settlement was of an action against Hudson. We submit that factually that is an agency. McKinley's deed of trust, I'm sure that they would argue, would be ineffective against property held by Erie because of Dotson's warranty deed, and Erie had no contractual relation to McKinley. But those lose in a foreclosure of the deed of trust, those arguments. We believe the same should be true of Erie's arguments as to whether McKinley prevails in a claim to what Erie and Erie on behalf of Hudson obtained from Dotson. Because essentially what this is all about is Erie got a settlement for less than the full value of the settlement by cutting out McKinley. And that's...
But Erie didn't get the settlement. You mean, it seems like to me that McKinley would be going after the person who received the medical care, not Erie. Erie had paid the same amount, whether they paid part of it to the chiropractor and part of it to the plaintiff.
Well, what is the value of an assignment? Assignments are used all the time as security for obligations. And that's essentially what this was. It was a
And if it goes bad, you sue the person who gave you the assignment. And if it goes bad, you sue the person who gave you the assignment.
Or if it goes bad and someone ignores your assignment and it's valid, you go after them. I would suggest that that's the way you get... That's what the purpose of an assignment is protection. It's your security for payment.
But what exactly was the assignment? I mean, it's not an assignment of a chosen action, is it?
No, it's not. It's an assignment of the proceeds. And the money is representative of the proceeds. It's not representative of a claim.
It's the proceeds from the defendant, the tortfeasor, not from an insurance company that has an independent contractual relationship and a duty to defend.
Well, then my question is, why would the release read in favor of both Hudson and Erie? I suggest to you that because of the contractual relation that Erie had with Hudson, they were one and the same when it came to payment of the money.
That would be a very different view of insurer liability in Virginia, if that were true.
If it were solely based on the auto accident, I would agree with you. But it's not based on the auto accident. It's based on the failure to honor a valid assignment. And that's what's at issue here. Otherwise, physicians, hospitals would basically, if it's a... Now, the irony of this is, I suppose, this is going to be great for the plaintiff's bar because it's going to force doctors and hospitals to drive all of their patients they're going to treat into the hands of an attorney because an attorney couldn't get by with it in this case. They would be bound to honor these assignments. But Erie, on a pro se claimant, such as Dotson, can work its magic and pay less than the full value and cut the physician out. If Erie's argument is correct, we suggest that an assignment needs to be honored. And that's the whole point of what McKinley did. They don't claim they didn't know about the assignment. And once they settled it, the money became proceeds. And they had it in their hands to pay it to the proper parties, and they did not do so. For that reason, we think either under the assignment or under the lien of 8.01-66.2, Erie and Erie on behalf of Hudson failed to do what should have been done.
Counsel, I don't have the cite to your brief with the J, but didn't your client disavow seeking relief under 66.2?
No.
No?
No, ma'am, not that I know of. The judgment order reflects...
At some point during the discussions and or in the briefing, perhaps I was reading another case, I thought I saw a notation that you were not proceeding under 66.2.
I don't believe we ever gave up
Thank
that
you.
Claim, but if it's there, I'm not aware of it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rebuttal. Just almost 11 minutes if you actually need all of that time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm hoping I won't. Madam Justice, page 69 of the appendix, which is part of the transcript of the trial proceeding in the circuit court, it appears to indicate exactly what you're saying, that the plaintiff at that time, McKinley Chiropractic, was not relying on the lien statute 66.2 or 66.5, but instead was relying only on the concept of common law assignment. And I would return to the theme that was earlier articulated, which is a person can assign that which that person has and can't assign that which that person doesn't have. And here what was purported to be assigned was the right to future proceeds. And there were no future proceeds until such time as the release was signed by Mr. Dodson, as between Mr. Dodson and Erie and Erie's insured, Ms. Hudson. And the terms of that release document extinguished any claim that Mr. Dodson had against Erie or Ms. Hudson. So
isn't the answer in that situation to have the person negotiating the release say, well, there's this extra complication, and so I don't get sued. Why don't you pay this portion that I owe to, I mean, that would...
As a practical matter, Mr. Justice, perhaps that might be a better way to handle something like this, but as a requirement of law...
No, I understand. I'm just trying to think of, you know, it doesn't necessarily foreclose the ability to avoid future lawsuits and headaches. I mean, you can just... I know these are pro forma documents and all that, but there are ways to work around it.
The court's decision in this case could head off something like that. And that's all I had. Thank you.
The court will be adjourned.